It's time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones. Looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist, and I do thank you for listening today. You know, if you or a family member has a gluten sensitivity, I believe you'll find this show very educational and helpful. And I'm pleased to welcome back as our co-host, Wendy Cates-Dancer. You know, Wendy is a registered nurse, a nutrition educator, and a counselor. And she sees clients in both our St. Paul office and in our White Bear office. And she is really very well versed in helping people follow a gluten-free diet, aren't you?
I am. And that actually happens in my very own home, Dar, with my husband, Bill, who's been eating gluten-free for many years. So I understand firsthand the pleasure and the frustration.
Yes, I bet.
Of trying to feed someone that's gluten sensitive. And but oftentimes people feel when they're on an outing, there's just nothing they can eat. And when that happens, that doesn't make for a very happy camper.
It certainly doesn't. So research has found that about 30% of the population, now think about that one for a minute, 30% of the population now has a gluten sensitivity, including my granddaughters, Willow and Hannah. You know, Willow is 6 years old and Hannah is 20, and they are both very, very vocal about being allergic to gluten because they know if they eat gluten, they'll break out in eczema. And that's a rash that is very itchy and, you know, it kind of drives them crazy. So we have a lot of gluten-free birthday cakes at our house and gluten-free bread and from Mad Woman Foods.
Absolutely. And I already have my gluten-free stuff ordered for Thanksgiving, including my pumpkin pie that's absolutely delicious. I was there the other day and I tried it. Fabulous.
Well, I think I better get my order in then.
I think so. So many people, I'm glad I already got my order in because now after we've said this, everybody will be rushing there.
Exactly.
So many people believe that gluten will only affect their intestinal tract. You know, they've heard about celiac disease and Crohn's disease and colon cancer and things like that. But in reality, gluten can also be damaging to the skin.
Mm-hmm. Let's say we know that. That's that old eczema.
Eczema and eczema, yep. To our brain.
Mm-hmm.
To our thyroid. And aren't we just seeing that every week?
We
at
are.
Least.
Exactly.
Probably daily at our business. To our bones.
I know. And we see that a lot. So it's more than just surface things.
All our organs.
Yeah. So, you know, actually, gluten sensitivity is so much more than cramps and diarrhea. It can be that, too.
Yes, it can. And heartburn.
And heartburn.
Remember when I came to see you years ago and you said, and I was sleeping on 9 pillows?
Uh-huh.
You said, Wendy, stop eating bread. 2 weeks, no heartburn.
Yep. So, you know, if it's left untreated, it has the potential, really, to damage the whole body and brain, depending on where you have more sensitivity, basically.
And that's what we really want to hear people to hear today, is the extent of the damage that gluten can do. In fact, gluten intolerance has been identified as a contributing factor in many different health conditions, such as attention deficit disorder, depression, anxiety, chronic fatigue, migraines, rheumatoid arthritis, and even type 1 diabetes.
That's a lot of things. You know, so today, if you have a friend or a family member that would benefit from this information, you know, you'll want to make a phone call them and say, hey, tune in today. Because to make this show even more enlightening to our audience, we've invited Dr. Tom O'Brien to join us today as we talk about unlocking the mysteries of gluten sensitivities and really how wheat harms your brain.
And Dr. O'Brien is a nationally recognized speaker and workshop leader specializing in gluten sensitivity and celiac disease. In fact, Dr. O'Brien invites you to join him Friday night, November 21st from 7 to 9 at the Hotel Sofitel.
So, you know, he's really going to be lecturing on, how the neurological and cognitive problems can occur when you have gluten sensitivity. So, Dr. O'Brien, welcome to the show. You know, I know many of the listeners would like to talk to you about neurological symptoms that can occur with gluten sensitivities. I hope you're on the line, Dr. O'Brien.
Yes, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning to you. And with us is Wendy Cates Dancer, and I don't know if you've been listening to the show at all online, but on the phone. But Wendy is a nurse, and so we're doing the show, the three of us today. So welcome to the show.
Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning, Dr. O'Brien. And we were just hoping that you could explain to our listeners how gluten affects the brain.
Yes, it would be a pleasure. Let's see, how do we start? Gluten, I'm sure many of your listeners may know, is a toxin for many people. It's an allergen, and how it affects the brain is the similar mechanism by which it is more commonly known to affect the intestines. It just depends on which tissue of the body you're referring to as to where it's going to manifest itself. How it affects the brain is it causes inflammation in the brain, and it triggers an autoimmune response so that your body can start making antibodies to your own tissue, and in this case, to the brain tissue.
So, Dr. O'Brien, when you talk about brain inflammation, then what kind of symptoms would we people experience, maybe?
My goodness. It goes the entire gamut from something as simple as people thinking that, you know, it's kind of like someone pulled the shades down and everything's just a little darker and I'm not quite thinking as clearly to attention.
You know what, Dr. O'Brien, actually, let me interrupt here a minute, because when you said that, I actually had a client that talked about that yesterday.
Yeah.
She said, you know, it's like the shade has been lifted now since you put me on this gluten-free diet. The shades are up, and I can actually, I know
think.
What's going on and think.
Yes,
yeah.
Let me give you an example of how that can be. This is a wonderful study that was published in 2006, where in Finland, they know that the government knows that cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of death in the country, and they wanted to see what can we do to help prevent cardiovascular disease from beginning in children.
Mm-hmm.
So they sent letters of invitation out to thousands of parents, and 2,427 children followed through on this study for 30 years.
Wow, that's a long time and a lot of people.
Study. And every year they did blood work on these kids. They got their grades in school, who played in sports, who was in extracurricular activities, anyone get in trouble with the law, anyone have depression. They accumulated just a wealth of information. They were trying to see if there are any patterns that they could identify and then help prevent the development of cardiovascular disease. Other researchers heard about this study, and they said, can we have some of the blood? We want to check them for silent celiac disease, which is the disease of the intestines when you have a wheat allergy. And silent celiac disease is when people don't know that they've got intestinal problems, that it may not give them outright diarrhea, so that they just don't know. And given that the blood's frozen every year, the researchers had all of this blood, so they said, sure, and they gave some blood to those people, the other researchers, and what they found was there's just over 50 of these children who are now in their 30s or mid-30s who had silent celiac disease. They didn't know that they had a wheat allergy. So they looked to see, what happened to these kids, now young adults, and some of them have families, some don't? What happened to them as a result of this wheat allergy? Anything different? And these kids were the same as all of the other kids in the neighborhood. They all have, there was nothing different, no socioeconomic class, no screening of who was participant, who wasn't. They were all the same kids. But this is what they found out. They looked at two markers. The first one, those without wheat allergies, 25% of them went on to get university or college degrees. Those with wheat allergies manifesting as silent celiac disease, 5%.
Amazing.
5%. Those without wheat allergies, 46% were in managerial or supervisory positions in whatever work they were doing. They were working hard in life. They're being promoted. Those with the wheat allergies manifesting as silent celiac disease, 23%. So what happens when you have a wheat allergy in your brain, it's a dimmer switch. It just dims down the brain. And these people didn't know that they had a dimmed down brain. I call it the dumbed-down effect. They just didn't know that their brains were not functioning at full potential, and hopefully they've developed good lives for themselves. They've got family, some of them. They're working as tradesmen or in some other profession. But the point is, they didn't go to college, and anywhere, only one-fourth as many of them went to college or university, and there is no reason for it, no difference, except that they had wheat allergies.
And that's certainly not a symptom that you'd look at and say, you know, gee, my child didn't go to college.
That's right.
They have a dimmed down brain. Maybe we should check.
That's what's so exciting about looking at this type of research. And there's one other study I'll tell you, because I think it sets a stage for the conversations. And that was in the Journal of Attention Disorders in 2006. They looked at 132 children that had these wheat allergies. And they put them on a wheat-free diet. And what they found was that the parents of every one of these children said that these children with attention deficit improved in all 12 markers by which you determine attention deficit. Every marker improved in these children. Unduly noisy, they jump up out of their seat, they blurt out answers unexpectedly, they daydream, they can't focus. Every marker improved. And the researchers at the end of the study said, we have no hesitancy saying that every child with attention deficit must be checked for gluten sensitivity for wheat allergies, because this may be the cause of their attention deficit.
And we find that very often in when we're working with clients, too. But, you know, I've got a great example of, and this is for an example of an older gentleman that I saw, I think like last week. And, you know, this is a gentleman that's in his 50s, and when he came in, he complained of chronic fatigue, depression, body aches, anxiety, constipation, and he's had these symptoms since he was a child. And all I had to do is look at him and I'd say, you have a gluten sensitivity. And I immediately put him on a gluten-free diet. And I think, you know, when he comes back in another week or two, I bet a lot of these symptoms will have lifted and cleared for him. You know, it won't be perfect yet after only a couple of weeks on a gluten-free diet, but it's going to be a lot better.
Yes.
But with young people, we see, you know, as you have seen, remarkable changes for people.
Oh, it's just critical. It's critical to consider that this may be a problem for a child, because the sooner we identify it, the sooner you get the children on a gluten-free diet, the less likely you lower the risk of developing other autoimmune diseases. That the development of autoimmune diseases with wheat allergies is determined by the duration of exposure to gluten. Oh. The longer they eat gluten, the more, and the numbers go up to 30%. 30% of adults will have other autoimmune diseases. Now, that's your thyroid, that's your nerves, that's your brain, that's rheumatoid arthritis, that's psoriasis, that's type 1 diabetes. That the list of autoimmune diseases goes on, and it's determined by the duration of exposure to gluten. So the sooner we check these children, the less likely they'll develop these other diseases.
So, Dr. O'Brien, we have to take a quick break, but stay on, because I know
that...
Yeah,
we need to talk about all these things.
So you are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company providing leading-edge nutrition education. You know, when I started my nutrition practice, you know, probably 30 years ago, it was rare to have a client with a gluten sensitivity. But today, 30% of the population cannot break down and digest the protein found in many grain products. Gluten is the protein, and it is found in wheat, oats, rye, barley, spelt, and kumquat. Today, many of my clients have a gluten sensitivity, as do my granddaughters, Hannah and Willow. So as a nutritionist at Nutritional Weight and Wellness, we have both personal and professional experience with gluten sensitivity and can provide direction and support you need to follow an eating plan to really stay healthy. So I bet we're going to have lots of questions today. So our number is 651-641-1071.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Wendy Cates Dancer, registered nurse. I'm here with Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist, and our special guest today. I'm so excited about this topic because there's so much misinformation out there, but we have an expert today on gluten sensitivity, and that's Dr. Thomas O'Brien, a nationally recognized speaker on the topic of celiac disease and gluten intolerance. Contrary to popular notion, gluten sensitivity can and does affect the body and the brain. It goes way beyond our gastrointestinal tract. Dr. O'Brien, we know that you've connected some other health problems that we talked about before we went on break, talking about the dull brain and autoimmune disease. But let's just back up a little bit. And what should parents be looking for? What should adults be looking for when we're looking for whether we have a gluten sensitivity or not?
That's a very good question. In terms of looking at your children, what to look for, there are the obvious things, and it depends on the degree of symptomatology which will move us to action, meaning to consider this. The symptoms that are obvious ones are a failure to thrive, meaning your child is one of the shorter people in the class. They could be as healthy as can be, but they're just a little shorter than the norm. Attention deficit or learning disabilities, any time that the brain is not working quite the way that we think it should be, and then we try to rationalize, say, oh, my child's just creative or different. Any time the brain's not working properly, headaches, of course, are very common. It can be as bad as epilepsy. As a matter of fact, 50% of drug-resistant epilepsy in children. And, you know, it's a terrible thing when the drugs don't work to calm down an epileptic seizure.
Oh, absolutely.
50% of them are reversed on a gluten-free diet.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
It is.
And I've actually worked with a young child with that, and that actually happened.
Yes.
Totally.
So it can be severe symptoms, or they can be very mild symptoms, gas, a little bit of gas, or any type of bowel irregularities, whether it's constipation or loose bowels and diarrhea. Those are the more or less obvious things that say, wait a minute, something's not working right here. And we try to rationalize, say, well, that's just my body. That's how my body works. No, it's likely there's something out of balance here.
Exactly. So, and what kind of test would we ask for?
That's a really good question. You know, and I'm actually coming to Minneapolis, as you know, next week, and we're teaching. I have an 8-hour day teaching physicians and healthcare practitioners, and the night before we're doing this lay lecture, which thank you for announcing it on your show. The testing is, and I spend about 2 hours talking to physicians about the testing because, unfortunately, the blood tests are often not accurate. It depends. If someone has, it's called severe villus atrophy, meaning that the intestines are really damaged at a severe level, then the blood tests are really accurate. They are very accurate. But if the damage in the intestines is milder, that doesn't mean that the disease is milder. It just means that the damage in that tissue is milder. The blood test can be wrong up to 7 out of 10 times. And
oh, wow.
So it's called sensitivity and specificity of the blood work. It can be as low as 31%. A new test has just come on the market that is a saliva test, where 4 saliva samples in 1 tube in 1 day, and it's a very easy screen to do, and it's the sensitivity and specificity is over 90% on this test, and it's just come out in the last month.
Oh, that's great news.
Yes, so there's new screening tests available. The traditional blood tests can be wrong on occasion, so the best judge is going on a gluten-free diet and just see how you feel in a few weeks.
Yep, yep.
And if you notice you feel better, then your body's talking to you.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. O'Brien, we have lots of callers on the line, and I'd like to take a couple here. Welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. You have a question for us?
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about autism and gluten sensitivity, so I'm just wondering about your thoughts on that. And then where's the information about the lay lecture, too?
Okay.
We'll be giving that later on in the show, so we'll do that for you, and we'll let Dr. O'Brien answer the question on autism.
Autism and gluten sensitivity.
Yes, there's an organization called Defeat Autism Now, DAN, and they're a very well-run organization that their goal is to get the word out about the treatments that are available for autism. And they train physicians. There's usually a couple hundred healthcare practitioners at every one of their conferences, and then 300 or more parents and interested lay public. And lectures are set up for both groups, and they occur in different cities around the country. If you go to the website, just Google DAN, D-A-N, Defeat Autism Now, and you'll find them. The very first protocol that's always recommended is a gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free, soy-free diet with every one of these autistic kids, because the first thing is you have to stop throwing poison in there.
We totally agree.
And for these kids, some of those foods, and sometimes all those foods, are a poison,
yes,
and it manifests in their brain as opposed to in their intestines.
And it isn't, you know, it is not the easiest type of eating plan to follow, and usually people need a little bit of help following it. But Dr. O'Brien, we need to take another quick break. You're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company providing therapeutic nutrition for many health conditions, including gluten sensitivities. You know, a question that a lot of my clients have asked me is, how long do I have to stay gluten-free? So, you know, when we come back, we're going to pose that question to Dr. O'Brien and see what he has found. How long do you really have to stay on a gluten-free diet? So questions, 651-641-1071.
Dishing Up Nutrition has listeners in San Francisco, Miami, International Falls, and Billings, Montana. Whether you live in the Twin Cities or across the country, nutritional guidance is as close as your phone. Nutritional Weight and Wellness offers phone consultations for people at a distance or too busy for office appointments. Would you like to increase your energy, lower cholesterol, or resolve digestive problems? Here's how phone consultations work. First, complete a health history. Next, discuss your health goals with a nutritionist. Then she creates an eating plan for your biochemistry and lifestyle. You make the time, and Nutritional Weight and Wellness provides the plan and support. Make the call from the privacy of your home or office and get nutrition expertise from the people you trust. For information, call Nutritional Weight and Wellness at 651-699-3438. Outside the Twin Cities, call 888-805-8954 toll-free or go to weightandwellness.com.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Wendy Kate Stancer, registered nurse and nutrition educator, and I'm here with Darlene Kavis, licensed nutritionist. And joining us today is Dr. Tom O'Brien, who will be in town next Friday. We're so excited. And people asked for information, so we're going to give it to you now. We'll also give it to you later on the show. So next Friday night, that's November 27th, from 7 to 9 p.m. at Hotel Sofitel in Bloomington. If you pre-register, it's only $15. What a great bargain.
Mm-hmm.
The number to register is 1, I'll give this to you twice, so get your pencils out, 1-800-444-998, extension 113. And this workshop is sponsored by Nutritional Dynamics. We love working with Greg Peterson. He's been on our show many, many times,
and
gives
people
us
love his
great information, wonderful knowledge and information. So that number again is 1-800-444-998, extension 113. The cost is only $15. It'll be the best $15 you've spent if you have any questions about gluten sensitivity.
So Dr. O'Brien, before we went on this break, you know, we were asking the question that I get from many of my clients is, you know, how long do I have to stay on a gluten-free diet? Is it okay if I stay on for 3 weeks and then I can go back to eating my bread? So what do you usually say to that?
Well, the studies are very clear. If you look at the definitions of this condition, they'll say that celiac disease is a permanent intolerance to gluten. That means it doesn't go away, and here's the reason why. When you get a vaccination, they give you a shot of the bug measles. The actual bug in your brain says, this is not good for me, and it directs the immune system to make antibodies to measles. So we then have a vaccination. So if we're ever exposed to measles, our bodies will make these soldiers that will go out and fight the measles. They're called antibodies. Well, the same thing happens with gluten, is that when you eat gluten, if you're allergic to it, you make antibodies to gluten. And you stop eating gluten and the antibodies go away. But just like with measles, if you check your blood right now, you should not have antibodies to measles. They shouldn't be there. But if you're exposed to measles, then the immune system, which has now been primed for this, recognizes this as an invader and just starts making the antibodies again right away. And the same thing happens with gluten. If you start eating gluten again, you get the antibodies back, and then here comes the brain damage or the heart damage or the kidney damage or the liver damage, whatever tissue that your body is sensitive to having the symptoms, and it just comes right back.
I think one of the things that's so frustrating for people is like nailing down that it is the gluten, because wouldn't you agree, if you've stopped it for a while, it might take a while for those antibodies to build up again? Or would they notice an immediate reaction?
That's a really good question. And when people get off gluten, as you know, with your clients, you see this many times, they feel better in 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
And with all of my patients, that happens. We do more than just gluten, but gluten's the foundation of it. And they always feel better. And then they'll come in a couple of months later and say, oh, doc, I had some pizza the other night. Oh, my God, did I feel terrible the next day? And I'll say, that's great. I'm so happy to hear that. That means no one can argue with you. You now know when you eat this, you feel like that.
Yes.
So for many of these people, they'll have symptoms right away. Now, it could be more subtle. It could be the dimmer switch on their brain. So they just feel a little lousy the next day. They just have a little depression. They just get in an argument with their spouse, and life has been good for weeks before that. And all of a sudden, that day, they're a little short. They're just a little.
You're talking about my husband now.
Yes. So, you know, the bottom line is once you're there with a gluten sensitivity, you really have to change your eating, and it is not that difficult in reality when you have some help doing it. You know, I think one of the things, Dr. Brian, let's take a caller, because I think we kind of answered this, but Katie, you have a question about how to get tested, right?
Yes, I do. I've had most of the symptoms you guys have been talking about for my whole life. I'm 42. So at the end of September, I was told to go on a gluten-free diet, and I felt better immediately. It was very dramatic and life-changing as far as my health problems. But I never got a celiac test, and I understand you have to be eating gluten for any of the tests to show the correct results. So my question is, I don't want to go back to eating gluten, but how important is it to know if you're simply gluten sensitive or if you have full-blown celiac?
No, I think that's a great question. And Dr. O'Brien, you answer, and then I'll answer, and then maybe Wendy will even answer. But I think we might all have, maybe we'll all have the same answer. But how would you answer that, Dr. O'Brien?
There's two levels to the answer to that question. How important is it? Well, for some people, they need the validation in terms of a positive test before they're going to comply. But you've said, I don't want to go back to gluten because I know how bad I felt. So that's your answer. That's one answer right there. The second answer is that many autoimmune diseases are activated by having a sensitivity to gluten. And when you go off gluten, some of the antibodies go down, but sometimes they don't. And that it may be important to test for those other potential autoimmune conditions in your body. And there's a new blood test that's coming out that'll look at 90 different tissues in your body with one blood draw to
see if
you're making antibodies to your heart or to your brain or to the myelin around your nerves or to your kidney or to your liver or to your muscles. And so as we look at it more thoroughly, more comprehensively, so that you can have the quality of life you want for the rest of your life, we have to make sure that the autoimmune mechanism is calmed down completely. So in terms of going off gluten, there's no need to do any testing if you're convinced that you feel lousy. There's absolutely no need. But in terms of the damage that's already been caused, and sometimes this thing has a life of its own, that you take the offending agent out of there, but this thing has a life of its own. And my analogy is people that lived 500, 1,000 miles away from Chernobyl and the accident at the nuclear power plant there 20 years ago, 25 years ago, now they're getting thyroid cancer 20 years later because the problem had a life of its own and it continued to develop over time, boom, 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 boom. And that's what happens with gluten sensitivity. Sometimes the other manifestations that you don't feel but what are going on inside your body continue.
So, you know, Dr. Brian, we're going to take another quick break here, but when we come back, a couple of things that I would like to have you connect is type 1 diabetes for sure, and how gluten-sensitive people can develop type 1. And did we have another one that we...
Well, I have one.
Yes,
I don't
okay.
know if you have another one, but I have one because this is a huge concern of mine working with the medical community. My question to Dr. O'Brien when we come back from break is going to be, how much of what he's telling us do our doctors understand?
Well, that's okay. Good things to ask. Okay, so you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness, a company specializing in helping people maintain a healthy eating plan through the holidays. You know, a couple of classes that I'd like to mention. Foods to Build Happy, Focused Kids. And that's going to be a New Hope, Monday night, November 17th. And we've got Balanced Foods for Balanced Moods. That's Tuesday, November 18th at Central Middle School. Now, Central Middle School has a lot of meaning to me because 36 years ago, I started teaching there. And I was teaching... Or no, it was 1963, whatever year that was.
That's a few more than 30 years, but
okay.
That's okay.
1963 was when I started teaching. Anyway, I had 36 active fourth graders.
We're not going to ask how old you are, don't worry about
it. That was in Eden Prairie, so we'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. Because gluten sensitivity and the health problems that can result is such a new topic to many, and many things that are out there are so confusing, I'm sure you would like to hear Dr. O'Brien speak. Now, we're going to try to get it right this time. I apologize to everyone because we made some mistakes in announcing this. But it's next Friday night.
November
21st.
Yes.
Next Friday night, November 21st. From 7 to 9 p.m. at the Hotel Sofitel in Bloomington. If you pre-register, it's only $15. The number to register is 1-800-444, that's three fours, 9998, that's three nines and an eight, and then extension 113.
And if you missed it, you could always call our office at 651-699-3438 because Shirley has that number. So if you are driving around and you just can't write it down, call our office and we can always give it to you. So now I think before break, we were talking about a couple of things that we wanted to talk to you, Dr. O'Brien. Number one, connecting type 1 diabetes to gluten sensitivity.
Yes, there's two links to that. One is that they share a similar gene, so that people who are sensitive to one will be sensitive to the other. And what the researchers have told us time and time again, that it's four times more likely if you have one, you'll have the other. Four times.
Wow, that's really interesting.
That's really huge. And the second is there's a mechanism called cellular mimicry, where the body is making antibodies to fight wheat, and the molecules in the tissue that cause diabetes, that's in the pancreas, they're called the beta cells in the pancreas, those molecules look like wheat molecules in some ways. They have a similar protein structure, it's called the amino acid sequence. And so the antibodies they're making that are shooting these chemical bullets to fight wheat, they're traveling all through your system. They see this protein sequence over there in that tissue, and they start firing antibodies over there, and you develop an autoimmune disease to type 1 diabetes. Now, the really interesting thing about this is that if you get to these kids early and you get them on a gluten-free diet, not only do the antibodies go down to wheat, but also the antibodies that are destroying the beta cells of the pancreas, and these kids don't get type 1 diabetes.
So, Dr. O'Brien, because of the fact that gluten sensitivities, the frequency has increased so much lately to like the 29%, are we finding that there's more children being diagnosed with type 1 diabetes too?
Yes, that is the case.
Well, that's, I thought, because I just could see we have more and more children now with type 1, and it's kind of in much more than I did, 20 years ago.
Yes.
And so it is going up. Okay.
Yes.
Wow, that's amazing research, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean,
it
really is. So now, Wendy, you had a question on connecting to
Right. It's like, what can we expect if we go into our doctors? What can we expect that they know about all these things that you're telling us about
today?
Well,
that's really a good question, and that is a very frustrating situation for so many people. And in my day-long seminar for doctors, we take the first 30 minutes, and we just talk about the history of this, and how did the education process begin for all of this? And it starts way back in the first century with a physician named Aretaeus the Cappadocian. And he was a Greek doctor, and he started writing about this.
Your great-grandfather, probably.
But his works were translated in the 1500s into Latin, and the Latin word celiac,
oh, wow,
which was translated for the Greek word for abdominal, came about. That's where the word celiac came from. So it's been thought of as an abdominal disease forever. And the abdomen is one of the areas where it can manifest, and it's the most obvious one. But what they didn't know back then, and they didn't know until the 1970s and 80s, and very few researchers then, more today, know, is that it can manifest in any system of the body. The British Medical Journal tells us that any organ tissue may be the damaged as a result of an allergy to wheat, any tissue of the body.
And are they taught this in medical school?
No. Yeah. No, that's the problem. That's why the doctors sit in my lectures and their jaw drops, mm-hmm, because I just show study after study after study of this and putting the pieces together of how this condition is an epidemic that can affect any tissue of the body. And as they see that, by the end of the day, they're realizing that almost everyone may be vulnerable, irrespective of their presenting complaints. I'm from Mayo Clinic. We have articles from Mayo Clinic about hepatitis being caused by celiac disease, articles on immunizations for hepatitis in infants that don't work if they have an allergy to wheat, about liver cancer being associated with gluten sensitivity, about cardiomyopathy, that's a swelling of the heart. It's a very dangerous, that's when you have to get a heart transplant, that can be caused by gluten sensitivity, and you reverse cardiomyopathy when you put them on a gluten-free diet.
Oh my goodness.
If they have an allergy to gluten. Not every cardiomyopathy patient, but those that do, it saves their lives.
And you talked about the myelin sheath before.
Yes.
So that would be MS?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, and also numbness and tingling in your fingers.
Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. That's a very beginning sign of it.
That's right.
Yep.
Or the numbness and tingling could be on your tongue, or it could be in your cheek. Any numbness and tingling anywhere in the body could be a sign, and often is a sign of gluten sensitivity.
Well, what about this? A couple of times I've had clients tell me, like, when they swallow something, or their esophagus or their stomach feels cold. Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yes.
And that's gluten also?
Well, it can be.
It can be?
It can be. It can be a number of things. But when you have a gluten sensitivity, you might make antibodies to your stomach. And so if you make antibodies to the stomach, those are called, sure, your parietal cells. And then you don't make enough digestive enzymes to digest your food. And you also don't make the mucus that's supposed to be in the stomach that protects you. So that, you know, hydrochloric acid that your stomach makes, it eats through wood. But it can sit in your stomach all day long and never cause a problem because you've got these mucus cells that are made in there that are like a lining, if you will, like a pool liner inside your stomach. But when you have antibodies to your stomach, you don't get the mucus, and so you get heartburn, and you get GERD, and you can have esophagitis, and
yeah,
there's
and
so many different symptoms that may manifest as gluten sensitivity.
So, you know, Dr. O'Brien, we have to take another break, but when we come back, a couple of things that I want you to think about is connecting it to the thyroid, because we have so many people that have thyroid issues, and then why are we having such an increase in gluten sensitivity? So you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness. You know, I personally invite you to come on out to the Hotel Sofitel next Friday night. You know, Greg Peterson and his staff, they're just great hosts. And Wendy, you're going to be there?
I'm going to be there.
I'm going to be there. And probably a lot of our staff, and we'd be just really happy to answer any of your personal questions. And hey, if you forget to pre-register, come on in anyway. It's $20 at the door, because that's usually what I do. I never get around to pre-registering. So we'll be back in a minute.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. Dara and I really want to thank you for listening today. We know this has been our last break, talking about a wonderful topic. We could talk for days on this. Dr. O'Brien, thank you so much for being here. But we want to let everyone know that if we want to see Dr. O'Brien in person, he's coming to the Twin Cities. I can hardly wait. That is going to be November 21st, next Friday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Hotel Sofitel. And again, the number to register is 1-800-444-998, extension 113.
So I think probably, Dr. O'Brien, they're going to have to get a bigger room after all this. So
I do.
Anyway,
think so.
You know.
Well, we welcome such problems.
So, you know, I asked the question, a couple of questions, is connect the thyroid with the gluten sensitivity. And then why are so many people becoming gluten sensitive?
Yes. Good. The thyroid is the second most common organ to be affected by gluten sensitivity after type 1 diabetes.
That oh, really interesting.
Autoimmune thyroid diseases are the second most common. And it's because most likely, most researchers suspect it's because of cellular mimicry. There's actually six different mechanisms, but the most commonly accepted one is cellular mimicry, that the immune system gets confused by the appearance of the tissue and starts making antibodies to what it thinks is a residue of wheat. And so it can manifest. Those are the people that have symptoms of a sluggish thyroid, cold hands and feet, hard to get up in the morning, wish they had 10 minutes in bed. They wear warm clothes in hot weather. Emotionally, sometimes a little volatile, blood pressure can be low, pulse can be low, can't lose weight even if they don't eat, and so they go to their doctor, they've got symptoms of a thyroid, they do a blood test is normal. There's nothing wrong with your thyroid. It must be in your head. That so many people are told that.
Yes, they are.
And it's unfortunate, because it may be that it's an autoimmune condition of the thyroid from a wheat allergy, and unfortunately most doctors don't check for that.
Very nicely put. That's great. So the other question was, why, or when did you
go
have,
ahead.
Okay, why are we all becoming gluten sensitive, or not all, but so many people know?
Well, there's two main theories regarding that. The first one is the 50-50 rule, that in the last 50 years, the gluten content of wheat has gone up by 50%.
Oh, okay.
And that's because it's been genetically modified time and time again, so that farmers have crops that last longer in the field, they're less damaged by pests, and the end product, the wheat flour, has more gluten in it, and so it can rise when they're baking goods, and it'll hold its shape longer. But gluten means glue, and so we've got more glue in the bread, and it's very hard to digest glue. You know, I had a patient tell me that in Poland, what they do is they take wheat flour, they add water to it, and they use it as the paste to put wallpaper up on the wall, and it stays for years.
Yes, they used to do that 50
years ago.
It's
probably doing the same thing in our intestines then.
That's exactly right, and that the digestive system is not designed to break down glue. We can't digest glue very well. So that's one theory as to why it's so prevalent. The second is that as an agricultural community, our race has been growing crops for about 10,000 years, but that's a blip on the screen for how long we've been on the planet, and that our digestive systems just aren't designed to handle that particular type of grain, that we're really designed to eat fruits and vegetables and meats and drink wholesome water, and that, you know, we're not designed to eat this food.
Dr. O'Brien, thanks for being a guest, and we'll all see everyone Friday night. Thank you.